When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Jake. You can get me on Twitter at JakeJackman2Ns, and I write for EPL Index.
Hi, I'm Jay. I'm editor of the EaglesBeak.com, a Palace fan site by fans for fans. You can get us on Twitter at the EaglesBeak and check out website EaglesBeak.com. I'm also producer and co-host of a local sports show, the Meridian Sports Show on Meridian FM. You can get us online using the TuneIn app. You can follow us, get all the information on Twitter at the Meridian SS.
All right, yeah, thanks to you both for coming on, kind of the OG crew. All of us been on since the glory and halcyon days of 2013, so pleased to have you both on for what is the final full show of the season before we get into all the segments following the last week of 2018-19. I want to start off chronologically this week with Cardiff's relegation. They lose to Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace certainly familiar with relegating teams, which we will discuss later in the topics. But for now, curious to get your guys' take on Cardiff's brief return to the Premier League. For me, I thought they had a pretty solid defense at times. It seemed once they were breached, they'd give up a lot. But they were difficult to break down. Sometimes they had a lot of clean sheets. I thought Etheridge was solid at times. Then you have bad luck incidents like the Chelsea match. I mean, tragedy with the Emiliano Sala thing that I don't want to get into too much and all the ramifications of that. But if that doesn't happen or if they spend that money elsewhere, you know, where does that put them? On the whole, you know, their 38 matches, they didn't end up being good enough to stay up. I thought they give a fairly decent account of themselves. Even Warnock, who even before the season started said he wasn't sure if he was at the Premier League level. On the whole, I think they did some decent things, but probably deserve to go down on the whole.
Yeah, I agree. I think they can take a little credit from the season, to be honest. I think at the start of the year, most people, myself included, expected them to go down quite easily, probably finishing bottom. A lot of the transfers they did sort of lacked a little bit of ambition of staying up. I thought they were more gearing themselves to going back down and then building from there, which at the time I thought was a good policy. And even now, I think, was probably the right way to approach it, as opposed to what Fulham did. Because now they've got, you know, 1 year of Premier League money. They've got a squad now that's a lot stronger than it was when it did get promoted, and they should be able to challenge at the top end of the Championship, no problem, whether that's with Warnock or with somebody else. I agree with the defence. I thought they set up quite well. They conceded a lot of goals, but that was due to a talent deficit more so than tactical. I think Sol Bamba's injury towards the end of the year probably stopped them from really having a good go at staying up. But that win against Brighton gave them a chance, and I think following that is probably that game against Fulham that's the big blow. Palace are a good team away from home, and that was always going to be a difficult fixture. But no, I think they did well, and they can take a lot of credit from the season. They've got something to build on, whereas I don't think Fulham or Huddersfield do going into next year. So I think they're definitely going to be the strongest ones of the teams that have gone down. But it's just one of those things that they probably didn't expect to get promoted. And then they probably didn't expect to stay up, but they gave a good account of themselves, and they could be proud. And I think they're going to be a Premier League team again in the next 3 or 4 years. It wouldn't surprise me. I think they've got a good foundation there.
Yeah, I completely agree with you guys. I think the sad thing is obviously the Emiliano Sala thing that happened. I'm stumbling over words because it's really difficult to comprehend that as a football club, as a football fan. I mean, you can be shocked by that from afar, but obviously what we've seen, what happened at Leicester can affect a football club. And I think the biggest thing that Cardiff struggled with that was scoring goals. And obviously, you know, if that striker had come in and started scoring goals, then, you know, we could have seen a different Cardiff team finishing. But yeah, let's give them credit. They battled to the end. Most people, like Jake's rightly said, most people had them down before they kicked the ball this season, because it was a surprise that they came up. Looking at a championship and the teams and the quality of the teams and players in that division, you know, they came up, with a lot of credit. But it, you know, nobody expected them to extend their stay any longer than a season. Neil Warnock knows what he's doing. You know, a lot of people hate him, love him or hate him, whatever you think of him, he knows his stuff. He's turned 70 years old, very similar to Roy Hodgson at Palace. We know what he can do. He's had two spells at Palace and, you know, he's done all right both times. And, you know, I'm not going to go into, you know, the whys and wherefores about him leaving. But, yeah, I think everybody at Cardiff can be proud of what they've achieved. It's just that he couldn't get over the line. And again, Jake rightly said, you know, the Fulham defeat last weekend was the one that completely knocked the stuffing out of them. If they'd have won that game, which they probably should have gone there and done everything to come away with the win against what is a resurgent Fulham side who are showing the form that they probably should have showed earlier in the season, really, with you know, the quality that they've got in that side, or the quality they've brought into that side. It's just a shame Fulham. I mean, Cardiff didn't do what Fulham did, and, you know, kind of Fulham threw all their cash, last summer, and it just didn't work. Cardiff were a lot more sensible. They've got some good players, and they go down the championship in shape. I think the likes of Camarasa, if they keep hold of him in the championship, he could be a focal point for them. Obviously, he was on loan, so whether Betis be able to will let him go, whether another Premier League side would be interested in taking him. I mean, I wouldn't mind taking a pot shot at Edmund Palace, to be quite honest. He's a skillful player and perhaps something that we could do with something of. But, you know, they've got talented Etheridge in goal, very good goalkeeper. Obviously, he's had plenty of practice this season because the defence hasn't been great. And they struggled again when Bamba got injured. I think that was a massive blow to them as well. But I think they've, you know, a lot of people said, you know, it's a weakened Premier League, but I don't buy that. You know, you get up to the Premier League, you know, on merit, and you're there for at least a season. As you saw Huddersfield the first season, you know, they had a great first season to stay in the Premier League, and unfortunately they've suffered this year. But yeah, so much has gone on at Cardiff that you couldn't have begrudged them if they'd have stayed up this year. But they've given it a brave fight, as any Neil Warnock side would do. And to be honest, I'd like to see him stick with Cardiff next season and see if he can bring them straight back up, because, you know, with that squad and that year of experience playing against the likes of, you know, the top Premier League sides, you know, they might be able to make a good fist of it.
Yeah, it is interesting you bring up Warnock, because he himself said he isn't sure if he's going to be the manager next season. So we will see what happens there. And for those wondering what the actual numbers were defensively, while they did concede a lot of goals, ended up being 63, only better than Fulham and Huddersfield, the other two sides to go down. They also had 8 clean sheets, which is the same as Arsenal, better than Wolves, better than United. So they when they held firm, they held firm. And Etheridge had the most penalty saves in the league this season. Like, they had moments, and I agree the Bamba injury was huge for them. I mentioned that last week as well. And when your squad is that thin and that full of championship players, because they didn't invest super heavily in the summer, at least not in Premier League level talent, you just can't suffer that. Much like Huddersfield. I mean, basically as soon as Moy missed 2 months, they went from maybe they'll survive to they definitely won't. You just, at a certain point, when you have a squad that's at that level, losing a player that is above that level, just it really damns you.
We know that only too well, Kev.
Yeah.
with the likes of Zaha, I mean, you lose him for a number of games like we did parts of this year and last year as well. It's just a killer for clubs like us. It really is when you lose a talented player.
Yeah, but you finally broke that streak, so I wasn't going to bring it up, but you obviously have every right
to. We did, yes.
Yeah, you did. All right, now we'll move on to a failure at a different end of the table. Manchester United draw with Huddersfield today, meaning that they have failed to qualify for the Champions League again. They were in last year, but I think they failed the year before, if memory serves. Do you view this season as a failure on the whole, with all of the Mourinho stuff, the ups and downs, the beating of PSG, probably the highest point in recent memory for United, but then also failing to clear this hurdle to get back into the Champions League. How do you view this season for them?
You have to view it as a failure, I think. Manchester United are, for all intents and purposes, the biggest club in this country. Liverpool might have something to say about that, but for me in my lifetime, Manchester United are probably the biggest club that I've ever known. And they should be challenging for, they should be challenging for titles, and they should be up there with the best clubs in Europe, really. And the drop off since Sir Alex Ferguson it was to be expected, but I now think it's gone on a little bit too long. And I think there's something wrong in the way they've been managed, and for them to finish outside of the top four is very bad, I think, considering the money they've spent, and that should be the absolute minimum for them, and they haven't done that. And I know you mentioned the PSG result, but I don't think they were probably lucky to get that on the whole of it. I think, and even a Champions League quarter final, it's not much to really hang your hat on, especially if you're not going to be back in the competition. I think there's a big summer ahead for Manchester United. It's going to be difficult for them to attract players now, and I think that they've got to go down the route of rehauling that squad and viewing it as a long-term rebuild. Now, I think there's a lot of players there that they're spoken about a lot in the media as being bad for the dressing room, and I think it's time to get rid of those players and to start again, because it, the way it's going, that they're signing players on reputation with no idea of how to get them into the team. Sanchez is a great example of that. Pogba, I think they've never really found a way to fit him in, and they signed him because he was Paul Pogba, not because they needed a player like Paul Pogba, which they need to change that, and they need to go down the route of signing players that suit the team and suit the manager that they have, because it all seems a little bit football manager for me. It seems like somebody's just going and just buying the players with the highest reputation.
Highest potential, because then you get like Baye and Lindelof, who are both super highly regarded.
Exactly. It just hasn't really made a lot of sense for them. And you look what Liverpool have done. Look, they're now pushing Manchester City all the way. And you look at the players that they've got that we now regard as top players in this league. Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane, Virgil van Dijk. None of those players were top players before going to Liverpool. But now they are, because they saw the potential and they thought they suited the style that Jurgen Klopp wanted to play. And they've all come in and done very, very well and become those top players. Whereas Manchester United are trying to buy those top players and fitting them into a team. They're going about it the wrong way. And it is a little bit worrying, because I just don't see how it's going to stop unless they, bring in a technical director, get rid of Ed Woodward off the football side, because I don't think he really knows a lot about it. It's a huge summer, but I think the season has to be a massive failure. But I also think that the last few months have sort of repaired Mourinho's reputation somewhat, because I think the problems at United go a lot deeper than just him. Whereas, a few months ago we thought that he was the big problem that was preventing this team of top players from competing at the top of the league. But it just turns out those players are probably the problem. They've got a lot of problems, and they need to. It's not going to be a short term fix. I think it's probably going to be a long time before we see Manchester United challenging for titles again.
Yeah, I agree with Jake on most points there. United, it's a massive failure for United after finishing runners up last season. It's a really good point.
Distant runners up, it should be mentioned.
Sorry?
Distant runners up.
Oh, distant. That's a valid point completely. And it kind of leads on to the next thing I was going to say is that, top six sides in the Premier League have closed ranks since Leicester won that title. And, it's unlikely to ever happen again. The only team that probably have a chance of, catching up with that core six teams is perhaps Everton, if they're managed right, in the right way. They've probably got the ability to perhaps push on, but that's, it's a number of years away yet. So when you've got a top six in such close, close rank, you're going to have one or two that are going to be deemed, or maybe more than two that are going to be deemed as a failure. You know, finishing outside the top four, finishing outside the top two, even. I mean, City and Liverpool are light years ahead of, you know, those other four sides in that top six. You've kind of got a league within a league, haven't you? But it's a massive failure. And Jake mentioned Ed Woodward. You know, the Glaziers have got to start looking there because, you know, Mourinho leaving, you know, all the fingers are being pointed at Mourinho for the problems on the pitch, off the pitch. But I think there's a big problem at the club in a number of areas. Ed Woodward is one because, you know, the recruitment policy has been pretty shocking, both management wise and obviously you mentioned already, you know, the big name rather than the actual whether it can fit into a side. I would also question Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's appointment when it happened. Give him to the end of the season for sure, but see how that panned out. But, you know, we've seen how, you know, that honeymoon period is literally gone through the floor for United, and where there was a lot of hope, and they were a fair few points behind, you know, that top four or five at one stage of the season. So they've caught up and got themselves in with the shot, but, you know, they fell dismally in recent weeks where, you know, they should have been able to continue that, you know, good run of form, you know, with the players that have got. This summer's going to be huge for United, and I think if, well, personally, I think Real Madrid are going to have a huge influence over the Premier League this summer. I really do, because I get the feeling they've got cash to spend. They're looking at the likes of Hazard, Pogba. You know, if they start stripping some of the talents, you know, because who's going to turn down a club like Real Madrid? Is going to be throwing cash around. New manager, they want to get back to the Galacticos style at the Bernabeu after what's been a horrid few years for them. Well, I say horrid few years. They won the championship last year, but this year has been a massive failure for them, and they won't allow that to happen again. United is a different kettle of fish. I mean, they've jumped from one boss to the next. You know, sacking a manager for winning the FA Cup and not qualifying top four says everything about, you know, a club of that stature. But was that really the right decision to make with Van Gaal? I would question that. Should Moyes been given a bit more time to, you know, to have a bit more stability at a club where things probably, you know, may well have turned out a bit better after a period of time? But who knows? It's all hypothetical now, isn't it? But I just think that the appointment of Solskjaer was very short-sighted in a way, because, you know, yes, he's a former player. He knows the club. He knows the style. But, you know, United are bigger than that. I just get the feeling that United are bigger than that, and they needed to bring somebody in that could shake up that dressing room, because the dressing room is clearly an issue at United. Plenty of egos. There's quite a few players there that are on the fringes and probably shouldn't be anymore. You know, this is a massive, massive club. Arguably, like Jake said, the biggest in this country, and shouldn't be finishing sixth in the table, fifth or sixth in the table, wherever that might be. They should be in a Champions League next year, but they're not going to be, and that's going to make the summer a fair bit more difficult to manage. I think, unfortunately for Spurs, I think Pochettino would be a great fit for United. No, I'm not trying to get him moved to United, but I just think, you know, he's somebody that would go with a bit of patience, if he's given time, would sort it out. But I do firmly believe that he's going to stick at Spurs, because he's got a good thing going there. And, you know, the additional pressure at United would probably be to his detriment. But it's going to be intriguing watching what goes on at Old Trafford this summer. Not that I care, but as a football fan, it's interesting to see, you know, the dynamics of a club as big as United and how they change things. But I think the Glaziers should probably have a bigger say as to the makeup of the club than perhaps people than they're currently probably getting.
Yeah. Then a question I'd like to pose to you guys is them, and then hate to bring this up upon the Arsenal fans on such a sad occasion, but they now need to swing at least 8 goals in order to catch Tottenham in a top four spot after they draw today. Another club that was a giant of the English game for some time there under Wenger. Do you think either of these clubs will ever get back to that height? And if so, which do you think is more likely?
Yeah, for me, I think football's a cyclical game. You know, you get teams at the top and then they go down for a little bit and they come back. You know, Liverpool a great example of that. They were down in sixth, seventh not so long ago, and now they're challenging for the title. So I think both those teams will come back over time. I think Arsenal are closer to it right now. I think even though they're not going to get top four, I still think Emery's made some positive moves there. I think their Europa League run has been very successful. I think he's on the whole, he's improved it. I don't think the improvement has been as big as supporters would have hoped, but I think he has improved it there. And I think with the money that's available to spend, I think that they're going to continue progressing. And if they do win the Europa League, you know, they're going to be set for a much better year next year with the Champions League and the money and the advantages that that competition brings to a team as in the top four. So I think for me, they're going to slowly get back to competing at the top league. I'm not sure if they'll ever be one of the leading clubs like they were under Wenger, but I just think it's with, you know, the right management, the right players coming in, the right technical director, they could get back there. There's no reason why they couldn't. So yeah, I think for me, they're more likely at the moment. You know, you can see some sort of progression there under Emery, whereas at Manchester United, you don't know what they need to do, whether they need to change coach, whether they need to bring in a technical director, whether they need to change a lot of the players, probably all three. That, you know, they've got a lot of work to do. So it's, I think the Arsenal are nowhere near as in bad state as Manchester United are. And, you know, if they go and win that Europa League, the season will be a success for them.
Yeah, Arsenal are an odd one, aren't they? I'm not sure what Arsenal fans are expecting this year after however many years they had under Wenger. You know, it's a real culture change, isn't it? Bringing a new manager in after that length of time, as we've seen with United, you know. Yeah, a lot of Arsenal fans wanted Wenger gone, but, you know, you just had to look at Old Trafford and see what happened there after Ferguson left, and it's never been quite right since then. Yes, they've won things, but, you know, they haven't got anywhere close to how they were dominant of the English game as they were under Ferguson. Arsenal, I think, is more hopeful, as Jake rightly said. First season under a new manager, you know, it's going to take Emery three or four transfer windows to sort out the squad that he wants. He's got a decent makeup of a side at the moment, but I think that there's still things that he can change and do in terms of personnel and, you know, strengthen up that back line and obviously losing Ramsey and, you know, bringing him some more talent in the midfield. But I don't think Arsenal are in as bad a place as Arsenal fans seem to suggest they might be. Yes, they're fifth in the table. They've had a horrid run of form, which I'm pleased to say Palace started for them a few weeks ago, which is fantastic. But yeah, they can go on there. You know, they're in a good position in the Europa League to, you know, if they do well in that second leg, they could find themselves in the final and win that. And, you know, that it wouldn't be a bad season for Arsenal at all. And I'm really not quite sure what Arsenal fans are quite disgruntled about. Again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, this top six sides in the country have kind of pulled together, haven't they, in a way, and you know, shut out the rest of the Premier League in a way. So it is that top six, but you're going to have two teams that are going to miss out, and those two teams this season appear to be Arsenal and United. I think United need more, have more problems than Arsenal do. Not just on the pitch, but as we've already spoken about, I think Arsenal won't be that far away from, you know, they've challenged for that top four this year, which I don't think many people thought they would this year under Emery. A good attacking side, score goals. They've had a blip last few games, but, you know, they've still continued their form in the Europa League. So Arsenal Chelsea in the Europa League final will be pretty decent, wouldn't it, for English football. So yeah, I got a bit of time for Arsenal and what they're trying to do there. So, like I said, it's a culture shock, but, you know, I'm not sure. I thought this season was always going to be a little bit about transition and seeing how it goes. And clearly they were never going to, yeah, struggle down towards the foot of the table, were they? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's whether they finish in the European qualification places, which, you know, they clearly will. So I don't think it's been that bad at all for them.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see if they do get back to those heights, Jake. I totally understand your point that football is cyclical like that, and teams tend to go back up and down to their heights and their lows and everywhere in between. But in the short term, if Arsenal don't, you know, somehow make up eight goals in the last week of the season, or win the Europa League final. I think them and United are both in a place where both of them have missed out on Champions League recently and potentially including this season. And the thought is that you need to spend to get in the kind of players to get you back there, but you're trying to spend as you're making less money. And I understand that clubs have billions of dollars. I'm not trying to argue that they don't, but that is a difficult thing to try to do. You're trying to spend more while making less. It's a very quick way to find yourself in ruin, smaller clubs at least. For those, they can probably withstand it, but it'll just be interesting to see how they try to address this, because United have been trying to buy themselves out of their problems since Sir Alex left. And it hasn't really worked out, as we discussed earlier, about their talent identification. They keep bringing in people that aren't really fitting their system, and then their system keeps changing. So players that may have fit somebody else are now not fitting the new people. I don't think many people are expecting that Solskjaer will be their manager at the end of next season. I don't think he's the answer long term. Although, like everyone's saying, I don't think he's the problem either. I just think it's not really going to work out. But on the whole, that's what I'm interested in to see this summer. They probably will get back to those heights, especially Arsenal, just because of karma for everything negative I've ever said about them. But it'll be very interesting to see how they try to get out of this. And if it's spending money while they're making less, that can be the beginning of a slippery slope. That's all I'm saying. All right, we will wrap up by talking about Liverpool. They obviously continue to stay right on the heels of City, who play tomorrow as we record, as they chase the title. But yesterday, aside from all of that title stuff, something very impressive happened. Trent Alexander-Arnold set up yet another goal, which means both him and Robertson have provided 10 or more assists this season, which is the first time that has ever happened at the same club in Premier League history for defenders. Do you think that this is kind of the front line of a trend where we've seen more attacking fullbacks be used more frequently? Do you think this is something that could happen again? Or do you think this is kind of more of a one-off, just kind of a crazy fluke, impressive though it may be?
It's difficult. I think fullbacks now are becoming better on the ball. And you see a lot of fullbacks, and this isn't only the two at Liverpool, but you see a lot of them taking more set pieces. That seems to be a thing that's happening. See, I think it's probably something that's going to continue. I'm not sure if you'll ever get two in the same team, you know, getting 10 plus assists a season regularly. I think this is quite unique. But I think it's the way the game's going, and fullbacks now, especially at the top teams, they are encouraged to attack, because a lot of teams set up to defend against the top six teams, and therefore they've got the ability to encourage their fullbacks to go forward and to provide the extra width. And I think with Liverpool in particular, you know, you have Salah and Mane playing the sort of wide attacking roles, but you don't really see them out wide very often. They are very, you know, they play centrally, and they are seen as direct goal threats. So Liverpool need to get width from somewhere, so it has to come from their fullbacks. So I think it's a lot to do with the style that Jurgen Klopp plays. It sort of encourages both of them to go forward and to offer those wide options and to create chances. But I do think it's probably a trend that is going to happen, especially for those top six clubs, because they need to have those extra outlets to break teams down, because, you know, we know how teams set up against them. I've watched every game we've played against the top six team this season, and we are one of the more defensive teams, but we do set up very narrow and get men behind the ball, so for those teams to break us down, they need to play down the sides, and it really does lend itself to fullbacks getting forward, as we saw yesterday. But I think I think this particular stat is probably to do with Liverpool's style, and the quality of the two players that they've got playing at fullback. But I do think it is something we're going to see more regularly. We're going to see fullbacks maybe become the top assisters in teams. If you look at Tottenham, Danny Rose gets forward a lot. Arsenal, Kolasinac gets forward a lot. City, Mendy probably would have got more assists than both the Liverpool fullbacks had he been fit the whole season. So all the top six teams do have these players, but I think with Liverpool, it's more of a style thing that has got both them to that landmark.
Yeah, I agree a lot with what Jake said there. I think it is a style that Liverpool seem to have this season. I don't think they've got, it sounds an odd thing to say, but I don't think they have that same creativity in the centre of midfield as the likes of City have. You know, City seem to have an abundance of talent in the midfield in terms of where they can create things. So they don't need to have too much out wide. Liverpool are a little bit different in that front because they rely so much on Salah, Mane, and obviously whoever plays up top, Firmino, which is why there's more space down the wings for both Robertson and Arnold to get forward and do what they do because they're quick. They can whip in a good cross. I do think it's something that, you know, what worries me the most is that wingers seem to be a dying breed these days because you're looking at the likes of Liverpool, City, Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal, United, none of them really play with an out-and-out winger anymore, and not many of the top sides do. The stereotypical winger-type player is kind of like Raheem Sterling, who plays more central now and floats and goes out wide and comes inside and plays more of a number 10 kind of role rather than, you know, a dynamic winger. If you look through the Premier League, there's not that many teams that have a out-and-out winger. Even Palace, you know, Zaha plays more central than he does out wide, which I much prefer him playing out wide and creating havoc than he does when he plays close to the striker, the lone striker through the middle. You just look down at Premier League, you've got Fraser at Bournemouth, just off the top of my head, Anderson perhaps at West Ham, but he's kind of a different style of winger. So it's a shame because I like teams that play with wingers and you know, that creativity. So that the attacking fullback seem to be kind of taking over that mould and kind of becoming a winger in themselves. You look at Palace, for example. We've got Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who used to be a winger in the youth teams coming through the ranks at Palace, and now he's you know, he's a fullback
and a good one.
He's a brilliant fullback. He really is. Watching him week in, week out, not much gets past him week in, week out. But you can see when he goes forward that he's not like a Joel Ward that we have, whose place that he's taken. You know, he wasn't that great going forward, didn't really have the confidence to go forward because he didn't particularly have the skill. But, you know, Wan-Bissaka, you can tell that he's got that something extra about him, that he can get out of the wing quickly. He's got pace and he's not afraid of taking players on. So he's got a little bit of that in him, which is, you know, very much the same as the likes of Robertson and Alexander Arnold, which have been fantastic for Liverpool this year. And it's a lot to do with the style, but a bit more than that, you know, the classic winger style player is a dying breed, which is a shame. But I guess, you know, it might come back at some point because formations change, you know, quite often. There seems to be, you know, themes, isn't there? You know, that's kind of trends in football in a way. You know, we used to play with two players up top. Teams don't play with a striker these days. It's all very different. But impressive stat for Liverpool for sure. But I do think it's a lot to do with their style, as Jake has already said, and some of their shortcomings in midfield in terms of creativity and how they play. Because you compare them to City, like I say, and, you know, and De Bruyne and Silva in the middle, very creative players and create a lot through the middle, which doesn't put as much pressure on the wing, the fullbacks to get forward and do that creativity. But yeah, it's a really good stat. I do wonder how it would affect Liverpool if they don't actually go on and win the title this year, whether it would have a negative impact on them going into next season. Because yeah, it's gonna two sides in this two great sides, and fighting for the title this season is excellent, but one of them's gonna have to miss out. And, you know, while City have won the title more recently, you know, Liverpool haven't won it for however long it might be. And yeah, it's going to be tough on them. It's going to be interesting to see what happens if they don't actually win it. But yeah, but back on point, fullbacks, really hard to pin them back, you know, in a Liverpool side that are in full flow, really are, as Jake witnessed the other night.
Yeah, it's been incredible what those two have accomplished this year. We'll see what happens with the team on the whole, but still very impressive. I agree with both of you. Maybe the trend is pointing that way, but it does seem a bit of a statistical oddity that we might not see again anytime soon. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, and we are back. Jake, we'll lead in with you. Some not-so-neutrals. We're hoping you'd be able to pull off the result yesterday, which you did not manage to do, unfortunately. But it was a fantastic performance, and I feel that's being overlooked some. What did you make of that match?
Yeah, I thought we played very well. It's probably one of our better performances of the season.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, like many people thought ahead of the game. I thought we were probably going to get beaten quite well. I thought that after we'd, you know, gone through that emotion of trying to get safe, that maybe we'd take our foot off the gas and see this as a game just sort of to not go in at full intensity. And if you don't go in at full intensity against Liverpool, you're going to get beaten quite easily. But that didn't happen. We played really, really well. The early goal that we conceded was a little bit disappointing. Set piece marking, which again we saw later for the winner for Liverpool was another one from set pieces, and that's something we've been poor on all season, which is slightly surprising with Benitez as manager. You know, he's normally somebody that gets those small margins right, but this year just hasn't really been great in terms of set pieces. So that's something we need to work on over the summer, whether that's getting getting more work in on the training ground or bringing in another defender or two that can improve us from those situations. But yeah, it was disappointing. But on the positive side, you know, we were without Almiron, we were without Longstaff, we were without Lejeune, who was three of our more important players over the second half of the season. But you know, we played really well without them, and I didn't think this group of players had that in them without those three players all available. But they all played really well. I think Isaac Hayden was very good in midfield. I think Atsu played very well, playing where Almiron normally plays. And I thought Paul Dummett had a good game in defence. Those players all came in and did a good job there. And we sort of matched Liverpool stride for stride. I don't think we can be accused of playing negatively like we have done in the past in these games. I thought we played on the front foot and tried to get in a Liverpool, and I think I haven't really seen Virgil van Dijk look as uncomfortable as he did against Salomon Rondon. I know a lot of Liverpool fans will be saying that Lovren being in the team was a big reason for their defensive, you know, frailties in that game, but I think Rondon caused van Dijk as many problems as he caused Lovren. So I think it just goes to show how important he's been and how good he can be against even, you know, the best teams in the league. And as much as we want Benitez to sign a new contract and stay at the club, I think we also want Rondon to sign with us permanently, because he's just suits us so well the way he plays. And
finally hit 10 goals.
Yeah, he did. I know. That's the first time he's done that in England, isn't it? So he's had a very good season. And I think that we'd be stupid not to sign him permanently, because he seems that he wants to come here. He suits us so well, and we just wouldn't be able to replace him with a like-for-like player, I don't think. I know he's a little bit old for what Mike Ashley likes, but I just don't think we'd be able to get a better player. And surely, you know, we can look for younger players with potential elsewhere, but this is a position we need to get right. And we've had problems in that position since we sold Demba Ba, I'd probably say. So I think he's the best player we've had since then, and it would be stupid to let him go when he's so, you know, dead set on wanting to join us. So that's going to be one to watch over the summer. But yeah, the performance is great, and it's although it would have been the perfect way to sign off at St James Park with a positive result. But I think we can even, you know, be quite pleased with that performance and take a lot of positives from that into the summer.
Yeah, can certainly hold your heads high, regardless of the result, although other fan bases may feel slightly differently about it. You brought up Rondon and trying to retain him, which has been a running theme based on his performances this season. Another player that's been very good down the stretch has been Ayoze Perez, who for a while just looked like he wasn't going to develop into the player that many thought he could be. Now we're starting to see those flashes a bit more regularly. Do you think this is him finally developing and that you'll be able to hold on to him, or do you think this is just another flash in the pan?
Yeah, I think with Perez, it's an interesting one. I think he always plays well down the stretch. This is normally when he plays his best football. Last year, he got quite a few goals in the second half of the season. He's done it again this year. But I think that this year, we're seeing the performances to go with the goals. I think he's been very dominant, and playing alongside Rondon and Almiron has really brought out the best in him. Although Almiron didn't get any goals or assists, he created a lot of space for Perez to you know, reach the form that he has reached. And yesterday against Liverpool, he didn't score, but he hit the crossbar in what was quite a remarkable piece of skill to get shot out so quickly and you know, hit it so hard towards goal. He had another piece of skill in the box where he sort of took it around two or three Liverpool defenders and managed to get a shot away. So he's so skillful in those tight areas. But I think, yeah, he's still only 25, I think. So he's 24, 25, still very young. And he's got a lot of, you know, progression that he could go through. I think he's under the right manager. He's probably at the right club. And I think that we've got to be looking at him as somebody to build the team around over the next couple of years. There's been some quotes talking about how he wants to go back to La Liga, which I'm sure he probably will do at some point. But I think I'd hope that we could keep him for at least another year or two before he does go back to Spain. And I think when we do sell him back, he won't go to one of the, you know, the top two, obviously. But I think he'd go to a very good club in La Liga. I think he's just a very good player. And the fact that we got him for you know, $1.5 million, it just looks like a great piece of business now. And I'm sure when we sell him on, we'll make 10 times that, if not more. So he's added excellent second half of the season. And I think that, I hope that we'll have him next year as well.
Yeah. Well, that's what I wanted to ask, because if it's a flash in the pan, maybe you capitalize on that sell now, get that money in, knowing that it'll regress. But yeah, wanting to keep him certainly implies that you think he can keep this up going forward. Jay, coming to you now to discuss Crystal Palace. We talked about this with Sam when you sent, I think it was Huddersfield down a few weeks back. Now you've only gone and relegated yet another team. Do you ever have, and we asked him this as well, do you ever have like a sympathy when you do it because you've done it so perennially, or is it just kind of another week out for you guys?
That's water off a duck's back, man. We seem to do it a lot. I have to say that the normal player, I think Patrick Van Aanholt has a ridiculous stat somewhere that he's scored in games.
It was like four in a row that he scored the goal that sent someone down.
Yeah, he was on the bench yesterday and didn't come on, so he was quite safe from being that person.
You were trying to be nice.
Do you know what? There was so much build-up to this game because obviously everyone knows our rivalry in Brighton, and the fact that a couple of weeks ago when it looked very much like this would be a huge game for Cardiff had they beaten Fulham the week before, there was quite a lot of hilarious lineups being tweeted by Palace fans, you know, like the Tea Lady and different people to be playing in this game. On the basis that, you know, Palace would lose it and give Cardiff a chance to stay up over Brighton. Obviously, that didn't materialise, and, you know, we're all professional in this game, aren't we? So Roy Hodgson was very professional and went there. I mean, on your point, relegation's horrid. You know, we've been through it a number of times and it never gets any better. And I do have a fair bit of sympathy for opposition teams that, you know, you end up being that team that ultimately sends you down, like Huddersfield a few weeks ago, Cardiff yesterday. Although to be fair, I think Cardiff could probably have gone at us a bit more than they actually did, but perhaps that's a lot more to do with the way we're playing away from home this season, really, that they just couldn't contain us. But I have a lot of sympathy because, you know, It will happen to us again one day. It's not a nice feeling at all. And I do feel sorry for the opposition fans, whoever they may be. If it was Brighton, probably wouldn't feel quite so sorry, but there you go.
Yeah, it was pretty funny that your win helped keep Brighton up, considering the rivalry which you mentioned there. But indeed, I mean, when you see performances like theirs today against Arsenal, when you see it happening to a club where you're hoping that they get a result, their defensive style can lead you to kind of end up rooting for them. I certainly was today. So on the whole, I don't mind them staying up, if only to frustrate everyone else. They only have to frustrate me twice a season. There are five other teams in the top six that he can frustrate. And by he, of course, mean Houghton.
It really serves us right for not beating them once this season. If we'd have, if we'd have beaten Brighton twice, or even once, they'd have been in massive trouble.
Yeah, so, add that to the list of things we mentioned with Cardiff, of things that could have been different.
Exactly right. I mean, you know, losing two derby games like that, yes, we're going to finish high, you know, above them in the Premier League, which is probably a bragging right, but realistically, you know, they beat us twice, and that's what's kept them up, really, because if we'd have done our job and beaten them twice, there'd have been an awful trouble. But there you go, that's football.
Yeah. All right, and Jay, then a follow-up question for you. We're going to ask Jim a very similar question with Tielemans, who they have on loan. You've had Batshuayi. He's come in. He did score a goal at the weekend. Do you think that's a player that you might pursue keeping long-term, or do you think that's kind of come and gone? And Benteke has been showing a little bit better form. Maybe you'll just stick with him going forward?
Yeah, Batshuayi has done a job for us. He's come in, different style of player to what we had already. Much needed, given us a bit of impetus up front, and he's a very lively character, and he scored a few goals for us, which has been great. The striker position was one where, you know, it's no secret we struggled with all season. Benteke had an operation, and he's looked at different players since he's come back, actually, from being injured, which he was carrying at knee injury for most of last season, which kind of contributes to his immense failure last season to hit the back of the net. But I think, Batshuayi, I don't believe we will pursue in the summer. I don't think Chelsea had any inclination to get rid. And obviously they've got that transfer ban, haven't they? So they're probably more unlikely to get rid. I think we'll be looking at a revamp of our front line. Benteke, we play so much better when he's our sole striker up front. Where, you know, if he scores or not. If he doesn't score, then he brings other players in. And I think he's got one more year on his contract left. So, you know, whether we choose to cash in the summer, I don't think we will. I think we'll go with him for next season, but it's the players around him. The likes of Jordan Ayew, I think we might have more chance of signing permanently in the summer, which he's done a job for us when he's come in. And I don't mind him. He's been all right for us this season when we've called upon him. He played well yesterday against Cardiff. Obviously, the Swansea-Cardiff thing, he started the game yesterday, and he worked hard, played well. I think he gives us a bit of another dimension because he can play wide as well as up front or behind the front man. So, you know, while a lot of people scoffed at him, you know, being signed on loan for us, when he's been called upon, it took him a little while to settle, to be honest. He came into the side a few times and didn't really pull up any trees, but, you know, every time he's been called upon in the latter stages of the season, he's been all right. And, you know, if it's going to be like a £3 or 4 million deal to get him from Swansea, then, you know, a squad player would be, you know, of his calibre would be half decent. But I think, you know, likes of Connor Wickham, I think we might see him go in the summer. I think we'll probably keep Benteke. Batshuayi is, I think that's dead in the water. I don't think we've got an intention of getting him. Although it wouldn't be a bad thing, to be honest, but I think we'll be looking elsewhere. Obviously, Sorloth didn't work for us, really. He's out on loan at Genk and has scored quite a few goals for them. So different level of football compared to the Premier League. Maybe he comes back with a bit more confidence. And, you know, he's still a young player, so we shelled out a few million for him. So whether he comes back as a backup striker, it'd be interesting to see what we're doing this summer. But, no, Batshuayi has been great to watch. But I don't see it going any further.
All right, well, that actually blends very nicely into what we're going to be discussing in Player Watch, where we're going to be discussing a player at each of our clubs who may be playing their last game for our clubs this coming weekend. We'll start with you, Jake.
Yes, there's a few. I guess Rondon is the obvious one. He might be playing his last game, which would be a shame, but hopefully that isn't the case. But I think the main will be Isaac Hayden. I think he's going to be moving in the summer. He's been trying to move for the last two transfer windows. I think it's he wants to be closer to his family. He's got, you know, things going on in his personal life that he wants to be back down in the south. So that's understandable. Where there was maybe a little bit of resistance from the club to sell him in January, I think that he's done so well over the second half of the season, and he's been so professional that I do hope, and I think the majority of supporters hope, that we do let him leave and you know, be closer to his family. So that'd be a shame, because he's been really, really good, and I think he's a huge talent, and I'd love to see him stay at the club, but you know, some things are bigger than football, and we should, you know, let him leave. And you know, it's funny that there's I don't know where he'd end up, but you know, there's not a shortage of Premier League clubs down south, and I think he'd be a good fit for any of them, because he's so talented, and he's shown that for us. He's been a major reason for our turnaround in form. So yeah, hopefully he goes on to have a successful career elsewhere. And then I guess the elephant in the room is that it could be Rafael Benitez's last game in charge of the club. But we will hope that's not the case. But yeah, they're the main three that we'll probably see move on. I think Shelby and Diame are two more that are going to move on. I think Diame needed two more starts to get a contract renewal, and he didn't get them, so he's going to be moving on. And I think Shelby, the fact he got dropped for the game yesterday, I think he's barely featured second half of the season. I think he's going to be moved on as well. So I think it's going to be a summer of change at Newcastle. Hopefully not in the manager's chair or up front. There won't be any change, but there may be. So there's a few people we might see the last of on Sunday.
For Palace, I hate to say it, but I do wonder whether it's a big one this summer. Whether Wilf's going to end up going somewhere else, whether he's going to be tempted by another shot at the big time, the Champions League. There was an article a few weeks ago which even Roy Hodgson's come out and said that you can't blame Wilf for answering questions that are put to him, whether he wants to play Champions League football. Well, yeah, of course he would. So I think that that interview was probably put in a way that, or written in a way that Wilf's looking to move, but yeah, Roy's actually come out, had a very good interview on one of the national radio stations a few weeks ago, where he was talking about, it was more interesting because he was talking about coming back to Palace and managing club football has reignited his love for the game, and how he loves being on the coach, on the training ground, and coaching the players and talking to players through their, you know, through the sessions and stuff like that, which is a nice change to what we had with Sam Allardyce, because he wouldn't be on a training ground an awful lot. He'd let the coaches do the work, and he'd be down there for 5 minutes and he'd be off elsewhere. So it's good to hear Roy Hodgson, enjoying that side of things. And I think that says a lot about the kind of character he is. He actually also said that he's looking forward to working with Wilf for another couple of years. So whether that's just, you know, giving the fans the noise they want to hear, I don't know. I did think last summer that this would be the season, that the last season we'd keep Wilf, if we obviously kept him in January as well. Wilf is still raw around the edges, so there's still bits of him in his makeup which, yeah, might put opposition teams off. Whether he wants to go to a big club, it's going to be that summer again where there's going to be a lot of rumours about Zaha. He's going to be the name that you're seeing all the transfer rumours on social media, which is going to bore the hell out of everybody, including Palace fans. It'd be more interesting to see which clubs actually show their interest. But I'm hoping it isn't the case, because it's difficult to see a team without Wilf in it. It really is difficult to see, because, like I say, We have frustrations with him, because sometimes he does things, but then other times he does things which you just think, who else is going to do that? Who else is going to come in and fill that massive void? And I'm not saying that we don't have a talented squad of players, because we do, but Wilf is our shining light. And yes, we've got over that hoodoo of winning games without him this season, thankfully. I'm just hoping we don't have to do that more often. So that is a big one. That's going to be a talking point. That's going to drag on all summer. My only hope is that we don't sell him late on in window, so it doesn't give us much opportunity to fill that massive void and spend some of that money that, you know, we will get for him, because he won't go cheap. There's no way he will go cheap. A player of that talent, you know, he does need a bigger stage, and I wouldn't begrudge him that, because he's given us so much. Elsewhere, Julian Speroni is retiring. So he was our third choice keeper. He's been at the club for over 10 years now and has been a stalwart, really has. And it'd be a shame. It'd be odd not seeing him around. But we believe that he's going to be offered a role on the coaching staff. So he's going to be in and around the club, which is great news. Elsewhere among the team, it's difficult to see. There's a lot of rumours about Mamadou Sakho moving on, which I'm really hoping doesn't happen. I think he will probably stay as long as we show ambition this summer, and that means not selling Wilf. Elsewhere, it'd be interesting to see whether we decide to cash in on Benteke. 1 year left on his contract, whether we let that run down and let him go for free. We paid $32 million for him when he joined us a few years ago. Elsewhere, I'm just thinking Max Meyer hasn't really proven to us. He came to us with a high expectation from fans, thinking, you know, a lot of big clubs are after him. We managed to get him on a free, and to be honest, he's not really been played in the position that he favours or regularly. So I'd like to see him stick around for another season. Hopefully he'll have settled in and go from there. But elsewhere, I think much of the squad will stick around. I think the only problem we have is left back. So Patrick van Aanholt's had a stinker of a season, so whether he sticks around or we look to replace him or just look for backup will be interesting. But I think elsewhere there might be a bit of talk about Aaron Wan-Bissaka, but it's going to be a long summer for us, I think.
For Tottenham, Pochettino has said it's probably going to be a painful summer. I think that's more of a personal thing. I think one of his biggest issues, as we've discussed on the show before, is that I think he genuinely loves and trusts every player at the club. The problem is not every person you meet in life or in a workplace is deserving of either or both. And so I think we will start to really see some people shipped on. You mentioned getting rid of Zaha. I'd be willing to throw you know, Lamella Janssen and 30 and just see if they do better at a slightly lower level. I do think those two players are likely to move on, but Lamella's injured. Janssen is currently one of our only attacking options off the bench, so he might get a look, but Lamella has probably already played his last match for us, as has Michel Vorm, so those don't really fit the prompt. The only regular starter that I think will be moved on in the summer is Kieran Trippier. There have been reports that lots of clubs are interested in him, and I think we're just about done with him internally. There's reports that his wife has been looking at schools in Naples, and there has been contact with Napoli. So that wouldn't really be surprising. Also, United have been interested in the past. Last year, Real Madrid were interested, although that was after a heroic World Cup campaign and not after a tremendously disappointing Premier League one. But on the whole, we got him in for $3 million. Anything we sell him for is going to be more than that. He was never meant to be the starter. He was meant to be able to spell Kyle Walker and to kind of push him on, which worked to the extent of him moving to City. And then he was supposed to be supplanted by Serge Aurier when we signed him, but he is both inconsistent and frequently injured. So I do admit that Trippier has played a larger role than he probably was supposed to, but it feels like it's time to cut bait. Then the two big questions, much like Jay, where that, you know, you have a lot of low-lying ones, and then, oh dear God, what happens if we lose Zaha? For us, that's Eriksen and Toby Alderweireld. Christian Eriksen, we've known this. Whenever people ask why he hasn't signed his contract, he has interest in two clubs. One report says both are in Spain. One report says one is in Spain. If you think it's both in Spain, you can probably pretty easily guess which clubs those are. Barcelona already heavily invested in Frankie de Jong. Slightly different positioning. Very different player ID. But it doesn't seem likely that he'd go there. They need the rest of their money to try to double up on Ajax and take De Ligt as well. Real Madrid is the obvious concern. And Jay, this actually ties in with something you mentioned earlier in the show, which is they could kind of dictate what happens in the top six next year in the Premier League. Messi can do that by himself if everyone's seen that stat. Real Madrid, are they interested in Eden Hazard enough to pay 150? Are they interested in Pogba enough to pay similar? Are they interested in Eriksen? Probably not 150, but somewhere in between 100 and 150. Really, who do they go for? Because Eriksen has always been adamant that he is fine staying here as long as one of those big clubs doesn't come for him. His form this year has not been great. I wouldn't be surprised, much like Jan Vertonghen in his second or third year when he was in the team of the year. The year after that, he disappointed. Like, he was disappointed he didn't get his move and then didn't play well enough to earn it back. Maybe that's this year. Somebody might still come in. He may still go. He's still brilliant on his day. I still contend that he doesn't drive us as a team the way a player of his caliber should. I think he tends to play well when we're already playing well. He does score crucial goals like the Brighton one, which, you know, it looks like has saved our Champions League spot. But on the whole, I think he should do more when the other players are absent. And then Toby Alderweireld, as people are very aware, has a potential $25 million buyout clause this summer. Word around the streets, not in the country I live, is that contract negotiations have reopened. Some people saying it's an actual long-term deal. One says it's just to raise that number well above $25 million, because I'm sure it wouldn't put off any suitors if that was 50 instead of 25. But that's the other big concern. If we keep both of them, buy a right back and a central midfielder, I don't think we're that far off of Liverpool and City, because what we saw this year was we were able to contend when everyone was healthy, and then we had no depth. So as soon as the depth disappeared, we plummeted down the table into this top four race, having been in the title one allegedly previously. I never really bought in on that, largely because of the depth issue. But on the whole, I think Trippier, Lamela, Vorm, and Janssen are the players that are currently in the senior squad that'll go. Eriksen, I don't think will go. I don't think he played well enough to earn that move, but if Real Madrid want to spend the money, it's very hard for people to say no, although Florentino Perez has said that he hated negotiating with Daniel Levy, which seems to be a common theme. Then Alderweireld will see if he gets a contract or not before that buyout clause exists in his contract. All right, we will wrap up with match previews. We're running kind of short on time, so we'll just kind of go with results. We're just going to touch on some big ones, because not only do we have our three clubs, but there's also a title race, and then I'll just quickly ask you if you think Arsenal will make up a +8 goal difference. We'll start off with Brighton and City. Jake, do you think City pull this one off?
Yeah, I think City are going to beat Brighton. Brighton defend deep and they get a lot of men behind the ball, but City are just a step above Arsenal and other teams that they've been successful against. So yeah, they're not going to stop City. City are going to win that game quite easily, I think.
Yeah, same for me, Kev. I think the big one's tomorrow night, isn't it, against Leicester? True. Or tonight? True. When's this going out?
Yeah, this is going out Monday.
The City Leicester game, I think, is going to be more of a problem for City. I think the last game of the season that they should. Well, yeah, it depends what happens tomorrow night. Really, it could happen either way, couldn't it? If they could not be bothered about it if they lose against Leicester tomorrow night. But either way, they're still in with a shot, aren't they? Even if they lose to Leicester, so. They'll beat Brighton, no problem. Thrashing, hopefully.
Yeah, do either of you think Arsenal will beat Burnley by at least 4 goals?
No. No, they are not going to be. They're not, they probably won't even beat Burnley, so no, they're not going to.
Fair enough.
I don't know, end of the season. You
get
you
weird
funny
results. Like that Tottenham 5-3 against Leicester, was it, last year?
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
And Jake, you know, the 5-1 against us, like 3 or 4 years ago.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
I think you get some funny results in the season, and we've seen it again in the Football League the last couple of weeks, that you can get some really peculiar results. And I can't see it, but, you know, Burnley run the beach, you know, that famous old adage, and Arsenal need something. And Arsenal have the firepower up front if they've got Aubameyang and Lacazette. So, yeah, I don't think so, no, but, you know, these...
You don't feel like you can just write it off. Yeah.
No, I don't think I can just write it off, no.
Fair enough. All right, then Jay will just come to you for Crystal Palace versus Bournemouth. Neither of you really much to play for, but you hoping you still show up on the day or maybe see some youth come in?
Well, it'd be nice if we showed up at our home all season, really, wouldn't it? So it'd be ironic of us to do it on the last game of the season to get a win at home. If you've got a season ticket, Celeste, it's not been a lot of fun watching Palace. But it wouldn't surprise me if we end on a high note by getting a result. And I think that will achieve our highest points tally in the Premier League at 49 points. So, you know, not to be stiffed at.
So something to target.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is the thing. It's... want to finish on a high. We play very well away from home. A lot of fans have been very critical about our home form. So a Bournemouth side, beatable. You know, it's not one of the top sides, is it? And no offense to Bournemouth. I think if we end up on with a home win, which we've not had many of this season, then I think we can probably consider the season not too bad at all.
Fair enough. And then, Jake, you're next up on the official fixture list. You're going to be traveling to Fulham to face Russ. I don't think we ever actually managed to get you both on a show this season, which is a pretty big bummer. But what do you think we'll see in this one, the revenge of the Championship roundtable?
They've done well against us in the last couple of years. We've been in the same division. I think in the Championship, they beat us twice and came to St. James' Park early in the year, and I think we're the first team to fail to score against Fulham at home, you know, with us being the home team and them being the away team. So that was a disappointing one. I don't think it really matters. There's probably going to be goals in this one because it seems that we've switched off any aspect of wanting to defend like we'd usually reliable on. So I think there'll probably be goals. It'd probably be one of those entertaining ones that you see on Match of the Day where neither team are much to play for, but there's goals and it's just a good watch. I can see it being a 2-2, something like that.
Yeah, then the other match that could decide the title, Liverpool versus Wolves. Wolves known for pulling those scalps this season from the top six. Regardless of what happens with Leicester versus City and that Brighton City match, just in a vacuum, do you think Wolves will ruin the title hopes a bit?
I can see Wolves getting something from this. I think Liverpool would have put so much emotion into the last few weeks, depending on what happens against Barcelona. Can't completely rule them out of that one, although it would be a surprise if they did turn it around. I think Wolves will get something. They've been in good form recently and they love showing up against the top six teams. So I think what's likely going to happen is City will pull it out against Leicester. It won't be a convincing win, but they'll pull it out and that will maybe like a late goal in the last 15 minutes. Something like what Liverpool did, and that will demoralise Liverpool and maybe City score an early goal against Brighton and it comes out, you know, as it does on the final day. I think something like that's going to happen. I can see Wolves getting something. I think maybe they won't win at Anfield, but I can see it being a draw.
I totally agree. I think Wolves have been a breath of fresh air this season. And, you know, while they've done the stereotypical, you know, not beating the teams they should be beating, but they've actually turned over some big scalps this year. I think they've got a big say in this Premier League title this year, and Liverpool playing them on the last game of the season. You know, we've not seen many jitters from Liverpool. We haven't seen any jitters from Liverpool this season, but last day of the season, if City get that win tomorrow night against Leicester, however they do it, then Wolves isn't a team against, to be quite honest with you. So that's going to be interesting. I fancy Wolves to get something though.
Yeah, that would pretty much derail their season, regardless of everything else we're talking about. So that would definitely be a fascinating one. Then for me, Tottenham versus Everton. They are in very, very good form right now. Son is suspended. Foyth is suspended. Kane is still injured. We are not in a good way. I felt such waves of relief when Arsenal lost today. Or sorry, drew today. It felt like a loss for them, certainly. Because I'm not confident that we will win this match. I'm not confident we will draw this match. The wheels have been ground down so far on every player this year. I mentioned it last week, played over 55 matches this season, or will have done by the time this match happens. And with a very thin squad, no signings in the summer, more injuries than I can remember in any recent season, we are just limping across the finish line. I think that we will lose. but I don't think it will be more than four. And since you guys weren't overly convinced that Arsenal would win by more than four, that should mean that we're in a Champions League spot come the end of the season. I think we're going to throw every possible thing at this Ajax match. We do get Son for back for that. He is rested, considering he got a nice half off after enduring the Bournemouth match.
Is that why he did it?
Well, him and Toby got taken off at halftime for Foyth, who then immediately got a red card. So at least those two are rested for this match against Ajax. But I think before we were going to have to throw our strongest squad out for both of these matches and just hope. And I think now we can throw everything at the Ajax match and just trust that we can hold down the fort decently enough against Everton, and that Burnley probably won't get overturned for at least four. The reason I say four is I don't think we'll get beaten by more than four. I don't think they'll win by more than four, which makes it that 8-goal difference. But anyway, as we've basically decided on the show collectively, that means Tottenham do get their Champions League spot. I mean, City do win the title. Sorry, Liverpool fans. And then we'll just kind of see how right we are. These predictions tend to go a little sideways, Jake, as you'll know from the championship show. Just things that you think will happen, sometimes they just don't. And Jay, as you said, towards the end of the season, you get some weird results. So we'll see. It should be a very fascinating championship Sunday coming up. I want to thank you two both again for coming on today. It was an absolute pleasure. If you'd like to tell the folks where they could find you or anything you're working on, now would be a good time.
Yeah, you can get me on Twitter at JakeJack with two N's. I write for EPL Index, and I record on the Championship show quite frequently on this channel, and we'll have some playoff stuff going out. So, yeah, check that out.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Kev, to be back on. Sorry it's not been more regularly this season, but hopefully that'll change next season. I'll be freeing up some time to enjoy our chats again, so that'll be good. I run the Eagles Beak, Palace fan site. If you don't know us, we're on Twitter at the Eagles Beak, and also just check our website. There's loads of stuff going up between now and the end of the season. We'll have a few reviews on there as well. A lot of my writers will be taking a good break over the summer, but still be active on social media because it's a Women's World Cup and there'll be a lot for us to talk about. We're big on women's football as well, so we'll stay alive over the summer for that. I'm also producer and co-host for the Meridian Sports Show, award-nominated Meridian Sports Show, actually. It's a local community radio station that we air on every Tuesday night. You can get us online, head on over to meridianfm.com, or you can find us on Twitter. Everything's on there on our Twitter handle, so by all means, please tune in, join in the conversation. Wherever you are around the world, you can get us online, and it's always good fun, bit of a chill, music, and just a couple of guys chatting about sport, mostly football at the moment. Don't know what we're going to talk about in the summer, though. So, our Twitter handle is at TheBrilliantSS.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. Yeah, you can find my fantasy writings over at goal.com and ESPN.com/fantasy, both of which, obviously, the last time it'll impact your team. There will be some review content after that. But if you're interested in fantasy, be sure to check that out. As Jake mentioned, we also have the championship show on this channel, and things are getting very interesting there. So be sure to tune in to hear what happened with the end of the season and heading into the playoffs. You have a West Midlands derby and Spygate as the two matchups. It'll be a gosh darn adventure. But again, thanks to you two for coming on today, and thanks to all the guests that have come on all season. Thanks to all of you who have listened. This is our last full show of the season. We will, of course, be doing club-specific segments after the last week of the season, which will be this coming weekend, which is insane. For those that wonder about the health of the show, we are just shy of 10 million all-time listens. So massive thanks to Jake and Jay, who have been on many of these, and also to everyone else. If you guys like this episode and about two of the segments, we'll clear 10 million, and we'll obviously do a big thank you post to everybody that's been on. But thanks to you listeners, of course, for tuning in this season and the six previous, which is insane. So thanks to you guys. Thanks again to you guys for being on, everyone, but especially you two. We hope you keep sticking with us throughout the summer and into next season. But I will stop rambling now. Thanks for joining us, guys. It was a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.